podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
So you know me, Woods. I obviously grew up a massive sports fan, but it really wasn't the athletes that I was in awe of. It was always the broadcasters. Jerry Coleman, Chick Hearn, some of the legends of the business. And I'm just in awe right now to be staring at one of them who has done just about everything in the sports broadcasting business. He is in town. He's got a new book out. It's called It Happened. Jim Lampley is with us here on 97.3 The Fan. Jim, it is great to have you in studio. Welcome back to San Diego.
Great to be with you guys, Ben and Woods.
Yep.
Very excited to share with you on this morning show.
So Woods is actually a faster reader, but I got a quick digital copy of the book, and I'm trying to scan through some of the pages. And I didn't know some of the details of your amazing career, including, and I think you detailed this in the book. So this business, Sports Talk Radio, which has been around for, you know, 4+ decades now, the first big station, WFAN, when they created it, first guy
come on
on the air was this guy. So there's no The Fan, there's no the, you know, 690, nothing like that exists without you. How did that get started? Tell me a little bit about the origins of Sports Talk Radio.
WFAN in New York. I was at a moment when I was being forced out of ABC Sports. My agent was casting about for things that would keep me engaged, happy, well-fed, etc. A radio entrepreneur from Indianapolis named Jeff Smullyan had bought a license in New York to explore a new idea, 24-hour talk, with regard to sports, 24-hour sports talk. And, of course, there were a lot of naysayers. There were all sorts of people who said, this will never fly, et cetera, et cetera. And he wanted, excuse me, a name host to bring the thing on the air. So July 2, 1987, 10 a.m. Eastern time, I began the first four-hour talk segment at WFAN in New York. I wrote a script for that day, and the opening script was this lengthy manifesto about all of the things that would happen as the result of this new crazy turn in sports media. How Bruce from Flushing would make trades for the Rangers,
yeah,
or Vinny from Queens would choose the new quarterback for the Jets, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually, in some way, shape, or fashion, all of the things that I predicted actually did come true.
Well, not only did they come true, they're still going on today.
Right.
We had our general manager, A.J. Preller, on the radio with us a couple years ago, and he dropped this term that we had T-shirts made, the junior GM, right? So everybody is a junior GM when you listen to sports talk radio.
Great.
And it's so, so true. And I wear that shirt with pride all of the time because it's absolutely true. And it was prophetic what you said that morning. People want to feel like they're a part of the teams that they root for. And, you know, San Diego's been so lucky. We lost our football team, but we got a baseball team that's been really, really fun to cover and watch. And we see that every morning.
Yeah.
People just want to be a part of it.
Right. And I even predicted in that opening manifesto that someday down the road, there would be three of these stations in Salt Lake City doing all jazz all the time.
Yeah.
And by the way, it happened.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. So it's great. I mean, I think that Sports Talk Radio has been a tremendous gift to sports fans everywhere. It's something to dig into all day long. And of course, the audiences and followings that guys like you have been able to develop have sustained and nurtured a lot of careers.
So not only was Jim Lampley the first ever host on the first all sports talk radio station, but as I understand it, Jim, you were also the very first ever sideline reporter, you know, when that was not a thing. And how did that come out? That was the ABC days when they were doing college football, and they actually had like a casting call to find someone who was a college-aged, you know, sports aficionado broadcaster.
Not just like a casting call, a national casting call.
Okay, so how did that work out?
432 candidates. And
wow.
And the original genesis of the idea was the things that ABC Sports learned about certain engineering elements during their attempt to cover more closely and more effectively the captivity of Israeli athletes at Munich in 1972. Reporters Peter Jennings and Howard Cosell pushing the control room. How can we get closer to this? How can we hear what's going on in the Olympic Village dorm room, etc.? And through that process, they learned, ABC Sports learned, that radio frequency cameras and microphones would do things that they had not thought they would do, that the signals would go over concrete barriers or around metal walls, etc. So they came back from New York, came back to New York from Munich. There was a meeting among the engineering, sports, and news divisions. Now that we know this, what can we do with it? And the first thing that was adopted was we could put a reporter on the sideline of a football game. And of course, politics being what they were, they knew it wasn't going to be the NFL at first. It was going to be college football because through the agency that handled the Chevrolet account, Dancer Fitzgerald Sample, ABC Sports effectively owned college football. And so they went around the country. They interviewed 432 college or close to college age people. I was probably the one person among the 432 who least fit all of the advertised qualifications. We're going to choose somebody who's never been a broadcaster. That wasn't me. We're going to choose somebody who's 18 to 22 years old, undergraduate age. I was 25 and a graduate student, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And through a long series of circumstances, I, along with a guy from Stanford named Don Tollefson, we were the first two people chosen for the gig. I was actually the first one to speak on the air. So, you know, that it's commonplace to say that I was the very first sideline reporter ever at a football game.
We're joined live in studio by the great Jim Lampley. He's got a new book out. It's called It Happened, A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Television. And I've been doing this 15 years. I often sit privately and think about how lucky I've been and all of the different roads and things that have to click into place to be able to do what I do every single day. It's a wild story, but I love that you acknowledge the luck involved because you do have to have a beautiful voice. You have to have a really sharp brain as you do. But the luck involved, tell us why you feel so lucky with what you've gotten to do.
Well, the subtitle is A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Broadcasting. I've had a lot of, or sports television, it says. I've had a lot of friends who have pushed back and said, why do you say lucky? You know, you had skills. You were able to manage situations. You worked well, da-da-da-da-da. And I always say, look, if you are the one person out of a 432 candidate talent hunt and you're the one who's chosen after a long summer of deliberation and you are the one who least fits all the qualifications that they're talking about, then you better regard yourself as lucky or you're insane in some way. And then that's just the beginning. All the things that happened in the 30 years, 40 years, 50 years following that are also governed in a lot of ways by luck and circumstance. And it's just the nature of this business. You go from one lily pad to another lily pad to another lily pad, keep finding your way along the path. Up comes another opportunity from some executive you never met or never heard of, and on you go. And my career has been a fascinating roadmap of that kind of luck, circumstance, coincidence, tangential connection, on we go.
So as you worked with ABC, of course, ABC was a sports behemoth back in the day, including broadcasting the Olympic Games, and you became an integral part of the Olympics coverage. And I think for people today, maybe younger than our generation, they don't remember how big a deal every single Olympics was. I mean, it's still big now, but I mean, back then, it to me felt absolutely huge. What do you remember most? How many Olympics did you cover with ABC, and what were some of those memories and those giant moments for you as a broadcaster?
I went to, I think I went to 5 or 6 Olympics with ABC. I went to 1 Olympics with CBS. I went to 1 Olympics as the overall host for Turner Broadcasting, and then there are another 6 or so which are NBC. So a variety of networks, but because I was at ABC Sports and ABC had originally a sort of stranglehold franchise in the Olympics. And because I was able to develop a presence and an identity at ABC, which included being in the host studio for Late Night in Sarajevo in 1984, being in the host studio for Swimming in Los Angeles in 1984, or excuse me, being at the pool for Swimming and in the host studio for Late Night. By the time I left ABC Sports in 1987, I had a great deal of Olympic identity. And at that point, the other networks were finally beginning to bid on the rights in a competitive way. And so ABC's stranglehold on the Olympics ended at about the time I left ABC, and I was available to work at other places, and, you know, and on it went. So I was very, very fortunate with regard to my timing, the coincidences that coalesced, and my identity with the Olympics to wind up going to 14 of them, which I have been told by other people who count them, I don't, is the most for any American broadcaster. If that's still true, good for me.
Well, you talk about coincidences. I remember, it's one of those days I remember when I was a kid. Obviously, the call that you're maybe most famous for, Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas, right? I remember where I was. I remember where I was sitting. I was watching the fight with my dad. Obviously, followed Mike Tyson's career. Was one of those guys you liked him, but you weren't sure. He was very edgy. And you're like, I think I like him. I really like watching this guy fight. But man, is he terrifying. You know, he was that kind of boxer of my youth. Nobody expected what happened that night to happen, and that's the beauty of sports. When something like that happens, you even as a broadcaster couldn't have been, there's probably a charge you get knowing you're about to call a big fight. You couldn't have been that charged up about that particular fight. It was Tyson. It was Buster Douglas. Nobody expected that.
Well, the first fight I had gone to for HBO was Mike Tyson versus Tony Tubbs in Tokyo, not terribly long before the Douglas fight. That was an utterly perfunctory fourth-round knockout. The biggest news surrounding the fight had to do with Mike's romance with the woman who soon became his wife, Robin Givens. And then we went back for the Douglas fight, which was expected to be the same thing.
Yeah.
And as the rounds unfold and the drama began to take place in front of us, by the way, in an arena with 34,000 spectators who were silent, who were making no noise whatsoever, because that's the basic Japanese decorum at that kind of a sports event. Or they were stunned into silence by what they were watching. But the bottom line was, you know, as the rounds go by, it's abundantly clear this is not a perfunctory knockout. We're going deep into the fight here, etc. The very first live prize fight I had ever attended was February 25, 1964 in Miami Beach, Cassius Clay's upset of Sonny Liston, which was seen, was seen at that moment. I was a 14-year-old. I'd saved lawn mowing and car washing money to buy a ticket. And that was seen at that moment as the biggest upset in the history of boxing.
Sure.
Now I'm sitting ringside for HBO in Tokyo. And as the rounds go by and Douglas is starting to get better and better, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I bought a ticket the first time I ever went to a prize fight to see the biggest upset in boxing history. And now here's the fight which will succeed it as the biggest upset in boxing history.
Do you start going through that thing in your head where you're like, I better come up with something now?
100%.
Because I didn't really have anything.
Absolutely. 100%. In that instance, I was in fact gaming it out and thinking, okay, what am I going to say?
Yes.
And then when it happened and Tyson's on the canvas and the referee's counting to 10. When the referee got to about 6, I heard a voice in the back of my head. And that voice was a relatively new friend at that point, the greatest actor of my generation, Jack Nicholson. And I had been on a golf course with Nicholson a few weeks before and had asked him, Jack, when you're getting ready to do the fulcrum line of the movie, when you're getting ready to go to the set to do the most important thing, when you're getting ready to say you can't handle the truth, what is it you keep as a mantra in your mind? And he said, Lamp, same thing I've been saying ever since I first went to acting class. Don't overact. So
nice.
As Tyson's lying on the canvas and the referee's counting to 10, I hear, don't overact. And that became Mike Tyson has been knocked out in pretty much that tone of voice. And I was I was really trying to tone it down because what could you possibly do to gild this lily?
Right.
No amount of screaming or shouting or some spectacular verbiage was going to elevate it. It was already where it was. So that became Mike Tyson has been knocked out, and I'm proud of it.
And no question.
You say it's my most famous call. I think it runs a pretty close race with the one that is the title of the book, and that also came from boxing as well.
So we're going to take a quick timeout, and Jim Lampley's with us. You talked about leaving ABC and how that turned you essentially into the voice of boxing for a generation, but I think people are going to be very surprised as to how you ended up as the voice of boxing. I was stunned when I read this part of the book. We will continue on with Jim Lampley in studio here with Ben and Woods after a quick timeout and a check of traffic. Don't go anywhere. It's San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. First, though, I got to tell you about SDFatLoss.com. I've told you about my weight loss journey, how I lost 40 pounds in 60 days simply by following the doctor-recommended strategies from SDFatLoss.com. I had a counselor supported me every step of the way. They will do the same for you. You sign up at SDFatLoss.com. Get your free consultation. You can lose up to a pound of fat per day and 10 to 20% of your body weight in just 60 days. And it's not just about looking better, although obviously that's a great side benefit. It's about feeling better. My back pain has gone down to almost nothing. I have more energy. I sleep better. My sleep apnea went away as well. Can't promise everything, but I can promise that if you follow the program, you should lose weight and lose it fast. Safely, no drugs, no injections, and you don't have to buy any bars or shakes or mixes. It's based on real food, stuff you eat normally at the grocery store like steak and chicken and vegetables. That's what I ate. I lost the weight and I lost it fast. You can do so as well. Just sign up again by going to SDFatLoss.com, get your free consultation, and right now take advantage of the spring special in the month of May. Get $200 off the program at SDFatLoss.com. Results may vary. We're sitting here listening to more stories from Jim Lampley during our break, talking about Jack Nicholson, and I mean, I can't imagine how many Hollywood celebrities you must have met at some of those giant boxing events. I mean, they were where to be seen.
That was who.
Would show up ringside.
Yeah, but I spent a lot of time with Jack. So does any other Hollywood celebrity now matter?
No, really, I mean, not. It doesn't.
Even for a younger generation. I mean, Jack is
the coolest.
Jack
of the cool.
Coolest of the cool.
Yep. Right.
Absolutely. But how you got into boxing is we continue our conversation. And again, Jim's in town. He's got his new book, It Happened, A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Television. He's going to be signing copies at Warwick's in La Jolla tomorrow night. And I'm sure it's available on all the Amazons and everything that you can
all
order
those
them.
Pedestals.
Yes,
yes,
exactly. But how you ended up in boxing? You were leaving ABC. There were some unique opportunities around, but you were the golden child at ABC under legendary executive Rune Arledge.
Correct.
You were ticketed to be the next Jim McKay, the next giant television star.
Well, at least I saw it that way,
yeah.
And my agent saw it that way, and it certainly appeared that Arledge saw it that way. He was writing things into my contracts that were delivering me toward that. And then, boom, a new owner bought ABC, Capital Cities, the station group. The previous owner had been an individual entrepreneur. Leonard Goldenson had lunch with Cosell every day at 21 around the corner. But now in comes this stations group that is taking over ABC, and they want to put their own guy in charge of the stations division at ABC, so they need to move the guy who's running stations for ABC at that time. His name was Dennis Swanson. Arledge was running both sports and news, so they make the easy choice. Aha, Rune, you have to offload one of these two divisions. Which one are you going to keep? He keeps news. Dennis Swanson becomes the incoming president of the sports division, and he arrives in 1987 with one basic predilection, which is, who is Jim Lampley? How do I get rid of him and his contract? And he says to my agent, you know, in no uncertain terms, I'm going to offload your client, and you're not going to have any choice because of the things I'm going to do to offload him.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to do everything possible to make him look bad.
Oh, my God.
So he identifies me as a, you know, a preppy, well-dressed kid from North Carolina, and there's no way that I'll know anything at all about boxing. And the very first sports event my mother had ever sat me down to watch when I was 6 years old was Sugar Ray Robinson versus Bobo Olsen. I watched boxing all the way through my childhood in the 50s into the 60s. I already told you about how I went to Cassius Clay versus Sonny Liston in Miami. Dennis Swanson didn't know any of that. So he decided that he would assign me to boxing. It would embarrass me, and that would have get rid of me. He also didn't realize that the division had just signed a get-acquainted, look-see contract with a 19-year-old heavyweight from New York whose name was Mike Tyson. So my first five or six network television boxing exposures were calling Mike Tyson fights. And lo and behold, you know, every time I'm walking away from ringside thinking, I can't believe this has happened. I can't believe that Swanson thought he could get rid of me by assigning me to this person who is now the biggest thing in the culture, maybe the biggest thing in the global culture at that moment. You know, there was nobody who got more attention than Mike.
What would have been the place he could have put you that would have embarrassed you?
Baseball.
Oh.
And I had done some baseball. I did some baseball, you know, in the 2 or 3 years before that. And I did baseball with two of the greatest people in the world, Bill White and Bob Uecker.
Oh, yeah.
And they were wonderful to work with. And, you know, I would say seventh inning, runner on second, one out. And Uecker or White would jump in and say, hit and run, because, you know, they kept me from ever falling off the end of the diving board for a couple of seasons.
That's amazing.
And you know, it was precarious. And
so had he assigned you to baseball, you...
If he had assigned me to baseball, he would have ruined me, all right? I would have been killed because I simply didn't know enough baseball to be a baseball play-by-play guy. I mean,
incredible.
You know, when you listen to the great ones, when you listen to Scully or Al Michaels or Costas, they think the game pitch by pitch by pitch the same way the managers do. I didn't have any of that. So, yeah, he could easily have killed me by putting me back on baseball.
That's incredible.
Boxing? No, that was a bad idea.
That was a bad idea.
And, of course, this ends up leading to HBO, which was kind of experimental in the day. Sports on, you know, cable, pay for cable. Would that be successful? Would people actually buy it and tune in on HBO? And, of course,
and
we learned...
they chose boxing because it is not a continuing season-long story. Every event is its own snowflake. And that makes it like movies, like other things that you are willing to pay for.
Yeah.
That was the whole key to programming at HBO. What kind of programming will people be willing to pay for? They'll pay for movies. They'll pay for unique and brilliantly conceived dramas. They'll pay for boxing matches, each of which is its own internally enclosed drama.
Yeah, so it's not a big long season.
That was the perfect sport for HBO.
Amazing.
And that's what got me to the world's most prestigious cable network.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy story.
It is.
Unbelievable.
But it happened.
It happened.
That's
it happened.
You know.
Exactly.
And just your thoughts on what boxing is today. I mean, as you watch it, obviously, still, it's not obviously the heyday of the sport, but there's still some compelling stories, obviously, in the world of boxing. How much do you still kind of keep tabs? And I know there was some recent coming back to it as well with HBO.
Well, I did the blow-by-blow commentary Friday night at the widely anticipated lineup of boxing matches in Times Square, outdoors in New York City, bizarre exercise in civic cooperation with a Saudi entrepreneur who is seeking to build boxing back to its 1920s prominence when it was the number one spectator sport in America. And after a hiatus, after the demise of HBO, boom, there's Lampley back at ringside doing boxing again. And on we go. The Sheikh, Turki Al-Sheikh, is utterly determined to totally renovate and elevate his boxing franchise. He is determined to make the best fights possible in the sport. He's got more money than fill in the blank. It seemed to have a good enough relationship with him and the people around him that I can expect to be calling more fights.
Jim, that was amazing 30 minutes. Thank you so much for coming in studio. I'm actually going to go next door and do a little bit for television with Jim as well. But we're going to take a quick time out. We'll come back. Paulie's got some Riley Report headlines.
That was 30 minutes, my friend.
You guys are amazing. You're very entertaining.
Thank you, Jim. Before we go, though, we do have some Padres tickets to give away. Fifth caller right now, 833-288-0973. Tickets to the game. Padres Angels next Wednesday, May 14th. First 40,000 fans in attendance will receive a free reversible retro bucket hat. Get your tickets now at Padres.com/tickets or win them now. 833-288-0973. We'll be back next here on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, while Benny steps away, wanted to give you a quick update. Make sure you go get the Underdog app today. You can play across all sports, boxing included, but the NBA playoffs right now, getting a lot of action, certainly. And you guys know how daily fantasy works. You just choose whether a player will go higher or lower on one of their stats. You can choose from things like points, assists, rebounds, so much more. Underdog, one of the best places to make picks during the basketball playoffs. Once you get your picks locked in, play with as little as a dollar. If you get everything right, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. So download the Underdog app, sign up with promo code Woods to unlock a special offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash. When you make your first deposit, promo code is Woods. Must be 18 and over, 19 and over in Alabama, Nebraska, 19 and over in Colorado for some games, 21 over in Massachusetts and Arizona. Present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24-7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Welcome back, Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Jim Lampley was fantastic. Thank you for coming in. It happened in a uniquely lucky life in sports television. Wrote that book, forward by Taylor Sheridan, which is really interesting to me as well. And all the quotes in it from Bob Costas and guys of that nature praising the book. So he brought me a copy I will definitely read. I mean, I opened up to chapter 18, Mike Tyson and Me. Cannot wait to dive into this. I'm going to save it for my long flight, maybe to Philly.
There you go.
And I got another long flight to England in July.
How long does it take you to read a book? How many pages are we looking at here?
This is you're looking, Paulie, at this bad boy being...
It's like about 200?
About 250.
250?
Yeah, I can get that done in probably a weekend. Yeah, no problem. I mean, I don't have the time I once had to sit and read books, but I try to take my moments. Most of the books I read, this won't surprise you, are rock biographies. I'm not reading much literature anymore, though I do still occasionally crack open some of my old favorites. But I really love to read, and I don't get enough time to do it. I read a lot on the plane this weekend. That's where I get a lot of my reading done when I travel. We are waiting for Ben. He is in the next room doing another interview with Jim Lampley for his other job.
Ben said, F you guys.
Yeah. F you. Yeah. So
Channel 10 does take priority.
Channel 10 got a little priority over Ben and Woods, but he doesn't really like the Rindle Report anyway, and I do.
It's true.
So let's
just get to it.
Let's just get to it without him.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report. With Paul Reindel.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Reindel Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? Need some help, please?
That was good.
Can I get a
All right, indeed. I was just getting dragged by your wife, Paulie.
Oh, you were?
On Instagram. So when,
it's unlike her.
I know, right? When Brett Boone got that gig yesterday, I thought to myself, well, he's a regular Ben and Woods guest. I'm going to go to Instagram. I'm going to post the congratulations from Ben and Woods. Mm-hmm. So I did. Just congrats, Boone.
Yeah.
And she wrote back in the thing. She goes, babe, can we talk about this font choice? And I go, well... It's the wrong babe. It's Woodsy. She goes, oh, just kidding, go team. And I sat there, I go, well, you know what? Paulie's got so much on his plate.
You went with like the Comic Sans.
Yeah, just the first one that popped up. That's just what I did. Is it congrats, Moody?
I don't know. I think that's just your default font on your settings on your phone for your Instagram. Because if I go to Ben and Wood's Instagram on my phone, I think it's a different font. What? So now you know if we post anything to our story, you can check the font and know who posted.
Well, you know who it's not. Him. It's Ben, who's in the next room doing an interview for his other gig.
He would never.
I want to assign him Instagram duties for a week. Just the responses. I mean, we get...
Answer our DMs.
Answer our DMs. You think he would be able to do it?
Self-admittedly, I'm bad at the DMs on
but
Instagram.
But you have so much other stuff that you do for the show.
Well, what I do is I'll post something to our feed or our story or whatever.
And then you forget.
And then I go back to my account.
Yeah, then you go back to yours.
But, yeah, we can work some
see,
sort of a punishment for Ben.
I want to see if he could do it for a day. One day. Go through Instagram.
He would be exhausted.
There's no way he could do it,
man. I don't
think
so.
All right, take us away.
All right, we'll start here in Major League Baseball. I was reading on ESPN. Jeff Passan this morning put out a story predicting the next mega contracts, the next wave of major, huge contract extensions in Major League Baseball. And there were some interesting numbers that he's throwing out there. So he separated it by tiers of guys that will make at least $100 million, $200 million, $300, $400, $500, and a $600 million player in the next year or two.
Okay.
So the class of 25 and 26 free agency, like Pete Alonso, he's going to get at least $100 million,
is
what Passan predicts. Two Padres in this tier. Dylan Cease. Now, I don't know that we expect the Padres to give him. Thank you, Jim. Jim Lampley, everybody. I don't think Dylan Cease, we're expecting him to sign a major contract extension with the Padres.
No, not
but he's
surprised.
In that tier. Michael King, also in that same tier of at least $100 million.
Interesting.
Other names, Zach Gallen, Framber Valdez. This is a long piece, and we're just kind of blowing through it here. The next wave is the guys that are going to make at least $200 million. By the way, Mackenzie Gore is in that $100 million tier.
Man, okay. Yep. I believe it, dude. I think he's leading the league in strikeouts.
There's a lot of
right
Padres
now.
Connections. C.J. Abrams also in that $100 million extension range. Benny, we're talking about Jeff Passan's latest on ESPN. Then you scroll down to the $200 million contract extension predictions. It's guys like O'Neill Cruz, Riley Green, Roky Sasaki, Spencer Strider, Logan Gilbert, and Christian Campbell of the Red Sox. James Wood of the Nationals. He is leading off in your $300 million contract extension predictions from Jeff Passan, along with Wyatt Langford of the Rangers and Jackson Churio, who just signed a couple years ago that smaller deal. He's about ready for another payday.
Jeez,
Passan predicts at least $300 million.
Wow. In the next year or two.
Where should Jackson Merrill have fallen on this list?
Oh, look who's back.
Hi. Hey, nice to see you.
Did we talk about that yet?
No, we did not.
Jackson Merrill would have been probably in the $300-$500 million range on this list.
Probably the 300 with James Wood, Jackson Churio is my guess. Two players in the $400 million tier. Two pitchers. Any guesses?
Pitchers, Scooble?
Correct.
And Skeens. I love Paul Skeens. Scooble and Skeens.
Passan has them looking at about $400 million on their next deal. And again, this is just all speculative. It's just a little fodder this morning. There is a $500 million category, and it's got two players, Kyle Tucker of the Cubs and Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds.
Those beloved Ellie De La Cruz.
And Passan's not predicting that they'll sign with their same teams, just what their contracts could and should look like.
Crazy, man.
There is one $600 million player in his $600 million tier. Any guesses on who hasn't been named yet and who doesn't already have their bag?
I wasn't here for the beginning. Did they mention Roky?
He was in the $200 million.
Okay, all right.
Roky ain't getting,
it's only been million. Couple weeks.
It's Gunnar Henderson.
Oh.
$600
really?
Million. Said Henderson was the one player mentioned by every executive as the best bet to beat Juan Soto's contract.
Wow. Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. Thought that was fascinating.
Bobby Witt got an extension. Off to a bit of a slow start. Yeah, man. I don't know that. I mean, it's Jeff Passan. I'm not going to sit and argue with Jeff Passan. If he thinks Gunnar Henderson's going to get $600 million, he probably will. He knows a lot more than I do. I will defer to the expert.
Get him back on the show, call him an idiot.
Yeah, call him a moron. That surprises me, though. That really, really does surprise me.
Yeah, I was going through that. I was like, okay.
Leo Dallas DeVries is going to be on this list soon.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. James Wood at $300 million, along with C.J. Abrams, Mackenzie Gore. That's going to go down as one of the biggest trades in MLB history.
It will. And
those guys continue the way they're going.
The funny thing is, man, is I feel nothing but joy and elation for both of those guys when I see them doing well. I really do. When I see James Wood hit a tank, I don't get the – I don't have that you know, I'm happy for that kid, man. From all accounts, great, great dude.
No, it's low-hanging fruit, by the way.
It is, and they did not want to include him. They
really didn't want to include Jackson Merrill.
Correct.
And they had to include someone, and they kept the right person.
I think so. I think a perfect fit for this team.
Yeah, it's low-hanging fruit to point out every time one of those guys does well, yep. And, oh, we got screwed, or, oh, that was the worst trade ever.
I know.
Or you got Juan Soto,
for 2 years. Yep.
That guy's going to also be in the Hall of Fame, along with some of those other names. We did not get to this story yet in the NFL, but the Baltimore Ravens made a, quote, tough decision and released their kicker, Justin Tucker.
Quote, tough decision.
Justin Tucker, of course, we have chronicled his offseason during Don't Do This several times, facing a lot of allegations of misconduct, sexual misconduct
16.
At massage parlors. Yeah, 16 different accounts. The Ravens put out a statement from Vice President and GM Eric DaCosta. Sometimes football decisions are incredibly difficult, and this is one of those instances. Considering our current roster, we have made the tough decision to release Justin Tucker. They go on to talk about all the significant and unforgettable moments he's had in Ravens history. And I guess it just comes down to, look, if nothing happened ever and none of this was ever in the news, do they release him still?
I don't know. The kid that they drafted, which they wouldn't have drafted if they didn't need
a
kicker.
That's a good point.
The kid that they drafted is incredible. There was a video of him bombing 70-yarders like it was nobody's problem. But again, you don't draft him if you got Justin
Tucker. Was also coming off the worst season of his career, and none of his contract was guaranteed.
Correct.
So it's a free way
out
to save some money salary cap.
And it's a giant PR curveball that you get to avoid now. I mean, it's just the perfect storm for the Ravens. And they're like, oh, again, we'll call it a football decision and move on.
Okay, guys.
Mm.
And then finally, we've talked about stories similar to this in the past. Just be careful when you if you have your phone, tablet, computer open. Children are very smart. They're very smart. They're able to figure out the internet very easily.
Like, it would blow your mind.
Yeah.
It would blow your mind to watch my 7-year-old navigate his iPad.
I mean, children. It wasn't just children. Like, animals are smart. I was playing golf the other day.
Yeah.
As soon as you leave your bag, squirrel, like, okay, knows you're gone, climbs in
eats
looking for food. I'm going, get out of there!
Yeah.
Like, and then they're smart. Yeah. They're smart. They can figure things out.
Be careful, especially if you have your credit card on your account, like for, I don't know, Amazon maybe. Very easy to just one click and have something delivered to your house. And there is a woman in Kentucky. Her name is Holly. She says her 7-year-old, he's a second grade kid, went on Amazon and bought 30 cases of Dum Dums, the suckers. Now, that didn't sound that
bad.
How
much is in a case?
Glad you asked, Ben. Each case has 2,340 suckers.
Oh, my God. All right, hang on.
This woman got over 70,000 Dum Dums delivered to her house. And by the way, the price tag on that, just about $4,000. I'm putting up a picture in our YouTube stream of the delivery at their house. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. It's like,
this 7-year-old goes, I am in the mood for some Dum Dums.
Yeah.
How many? 30 cases sounds great.
He buys in bulk, and I like that about him.
I mean, you're getting a great count for buying in bulk. The question is, are you going to be able to get through
70,000 Dum Dums?
70,000 Dum Dums.
No, you won't. Man, that is and you know, what do you do? The people at Dum Dums are like, oh my God, yes, we haven't made this much money.
I didn't even know anyone still ate Dum Dums.
Is there any update? Like, she's obviously sending it back, getting her money back.
Can you? It's food. You can't just return it.
It's a sucker, though.
It says she contacted Amazon immediately.
Milk.
Right.
Like, I'm not taking that milk back. It's rotten.
It says she called Amazon immediately. They were pretty chill. They said, she says a rep told her that she could just refuse the delivery and they would refund her money. Then the driver came. They didn't knock. They just stacked all of these. Like, you don't always have to have a signature or anything, especially with Amazon. Once they were delivered, Amazon says, sorry, no take backs.
No.
Because they were delivered.
Now they got a lug. All those,
I don't know if it has to do with
UPS,
like
UPS store.
It might have something to do with the fact that they're technically a food item,
right.
So they're not going to take it back. She told the story on social media. Other people started chiming in and helping out and buying boxes cases from her to just help her out a little bit. She says she has managed to sell all of them. 30 cases.
That's pretty fast.
So it worked out really, really well.
She made $7,000 on it. Yeah, kid, do that again.
Dumb Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, for real. Holy smoke. You ever get that charge on your phone? You know, because they're older now. But you ever get that charge on your phone years ago? You're like, did you guys order?
I know that occasionally there's some online, like a setup, like when they were younger, setting up their gaming accounts
and stuff.
Yeah. And all of a sudden there's like a $5.99 charge or something. Like,
$5.99 is one you think you can snake by the old man, you know, but not you.
Not me. I'm checking. I'm absolutely checking.
So Amazon would not take the Dum Dums back, but they reached out to her like third time. They wanted to try to refund her money because they might have been taking some heat. Like, really, guys? You're going to charge this woman $4,000? Yeah. She was working with her bank also. They were disputing the charge. And so since she ended up selling all of these, she did get her money back from the bank or from Amazon. She's donating all of the money people... It ended up being a really
good
story.
And by the way, Dum Dums has now cashed in with some free advertising on this story, probably worth well more than whatever the cost of the Dum Dums was.
Man, yeah. Oh, Adam says back in the day, it was the 900 numbers. Got me a couple times.
He said
times.
For Santa Claus.
Oh.
Is that who you were calling?
Mine was for Girls Gone Wild. They'll start showing up in the old mailbox. Get home about 3 a.m. Those commercials are like, all right.
Give it a try.
Give it a
whirl. You weren't immediately terrified by the disclaimer. It's like $4.99 a minute or whatever it was.
No, this is for the DVDs.
Oh, okay.
Not the love
line. It was an 800
number.
It was an 800 number, but you get the DVDs sent.
I would have been beyond terrified to call a 900 number.
I remember my mom caught me in high school buying cigarettes on her credit card, and it was like the end of 16. She gave me a credit card to go to the store.
Was that still back in the day when they put the credit card on the carbon paper?
I think they swiped it, but
have to make a copy every single time. I remember like going to the gas station with my parents or grandparents. They'd have to come out and bring that plastic thing and have the whole carbon copy.
Yeah.
So I don't know whatever happened to it after that. They'd mail it in.
They'd mail it in, I think. But
how that ever worked for credits, I have no idea.
God, those days were terrible, man. Terrible.
This hour on 97.3 The Fan, brought to you by Staples. Your local Staples has hot deals and super low prices throughout the store and everything for your business. Right now at Staples, save up to $250 off your print order. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for details. Ends June 14th, plus saving even more with the Easy Rewards program.
You got it.
At Staples. We're done. We're out of time. For Paulie Rindle, Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Braden's next. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning here on The Fan.